After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something you're aching to get off your chest? It's not healthy to keep it bottled up inside. Don't cling too tightly to your secrets, regrets, struggles, and resentments. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's also a great way to learn to resolve conflict, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/heartwisdom today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/heartwisdom.
Welcome to the Jack Kornfield Heart Wisdom Hour. We are delighted to share with you Jack's innate common sense wisdom and his clear, open heart. If you are interested in supporting Jack's podcast, go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/Jack.
I'm really happy to be here with you today and to have your company. It's a tough time in our culture and in our world, and maybe one could say that often and over many cycles in the last, centuries. But here we sit, coming to meditate in the middle of these fraught and very divisive conversations about DACA and Dreamers, about school shootings and guns, what happened in Parkland and so forth, the tragedies we carry, about immigration, about who we are as a culture and a society and as human beings. And whatever your political persuasion, and I'm not going to assume anything about that here, these things weigh on our hearts, and the divisiveness is so difficult, and the solutions are also hard to find. And they're particularly hard to find when we look outwardly, because it's quite obvious that no amount of technological development, and I just came this morning from a conference called Wisdom 2.0 in San Francisco, which was a meeting of Silicon Valley people and technologists with a group of people who are trying to infuse it with both human and spiritual values, if you will, and compassion, sort of open source compassion as part of the project. No amount of computers, no artificial intelligence, no, the smartphone that has the great Library of Alexandria in your pocket, along with every cat and kitty video that's ever been made. No amount of biotechnology, nanotechnology, space technology, all this extraordinary stuff is going to stop continuing warfare, going to stop continuing racism, going to stop continuing tribalism, going to stop environmental destruction. The outer developments of humanity, which are now remarkable, have to be met with an inner development of our consciousness and our conscience and our sense of interconnection. Otherwise, the politics in the world plays on the amygdala and the kind of reptilian primitive brain. That's where you get people's attention. There's a snake, there's a tiger. Oh my God, the terrorists are going to come get you. in your home or whatever it is, and we let the terror come inside, instead of actually seeing the world with its unbearable beauty and magnificence with a good heart. And as Nelson Mandela said, after 27 years in Robben Island prison, it never hurts to think the better of someone or think the good in someone. They often act the better because of it. And because he was able to see the potential and the beauty in humanity, he was able to walk out of all those years of prison. They can put your body in prison, but no one can imprison your spirit. And change not just South Africa, but the imagination of the world of what's possible. And the beautiful thing is that it's not Nelson Mandela, it's you and me and all of us. We each have that potential, no matter the circumstances, the measure of suffering that you have, which we all do, because it's part of human incarnation. Anybody not have that? Raise your hand, you can have your money back, right? And the measure of beauty and joy that you have. And so we come with this mysterious human incarnation to take our seat in stillness, in the midst of it all, and begin to listen and tend with a loving awareness, this body and heart and mind that we have. And it's a beautiful thing. Every wise culture knows that there's times to walk in the mountains or walk by the ocean or go out into the desert or go to the cathedral or someplace and just listen for a time and not, you know, check things off your to-do list or, as Albert Einstein reportedly said in Scientific American, if you can drive safely while kissing someone, you're simply not giving the kiss the attention it deserves, right? And so, yeah, we live in this wired world, but we have to step out of it. You know, whether it's the kiss or the, you know, the fruiting and flowering of the plum blossoms that have come in this springtime. Looking for little stories to tell you. In the early 1980s, I started a rigorous 6-year academic medical program in Boston that required me to work during the day in part and take extra classes at night and more work on the weekends. And the first summer off, I wanted to get away from the studies and work with my hands, be close to the earth. So I went to live with an Amish family in Pennsylvania. The experience renewed me, and I decided to do it again the next summer. That year, I drove from Boston to Western Pennsylvania on a holiday weekend, terrible traffic, you know, hours and hours of driving, and I was already exhausted. My Amish host had delayed their dinner for me. During the meal, I tried to act calm and natural, but I felt full of nerves. My Amish host could clearly tell something was amiss because at the end of dinner, he said, "Come with me." I followed him to the backyard, which bordered an alfalfa field. Although his faith discouraged smoking, the farmer lit a cigarette. 3 of his children gambled around while 2 others clung to him. The farmer stood without saying a word, looking out over the alfalfa. I did the same. The dark green field was becoming harder to see in the fading light, and then out of the alfalfa rose fireflies. A few at first, but soon there were hundreds. Their pinpricks of light mingled with the stars, heaven and earth meeting in this humble man's backyard. I felt my nervousness leave me. The farmer turned and said, "That's for you." One more thing to say, and this is actually a passage from Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, "Your mind is like a piece of land." It kind of connects to this lovely Amish image that was almost a poem. "Planted with many different kinds of seeds, or you could say consciousness, is planted, filled with seeds, seeds of joy and peace, of mindfulness, understanding, love, and seeds of craving, of anger, fear, hate, and forgetfulness. These healthy and unhealthy seeds are always there, sleeping in the soil of your mind or your heart. And the quality of your life depends on the seeds that you water. If you plant beautiful seeds, they will grow. If you water a seed of peace in your mind, peace will develop. When the seeds of happiness in you are watered, you become happy. When the seeds of anger or fear or hatred are watered, you become angry or fearful or hateful. The seeds that are watered frequently are those that will grow. And this starts to describe both our human condition, the possibilities for us in this human incarnation. We can all kind of hear that. And the beautiful news that we can water different seeds, that we can choose where to direct our attention, and we can quiet the mind, steady our attention, tend and open the heart. And this is really the game. This is really the offering and the practice that we'll work with. Now, it's not always a pretty picture. I do have to say that. My dear friend Annie Lamott, great kind of writer and humorist, says, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone, which is why we've got you all here together, right? So as you sit, you also will feel the tensions you carry in your body. You'll feel the unfinished business of your heart. If there's grief or tears or longing, love that isn't expressed, if fears, all that, that stuff is there. What you will find is your own life presenting itself to you without distraction. And then you think, oh my God, but I'm getting distracted in here. Meditation becomes like a mirror, and the synonym we'll use for mindfulness is loving awareness. The point isn't to have a particular experience today, not even a quiet one where you're just with your breath and everything goes away. May it happen for you for a little bit. But that's not going to be your main experience. Your main experience is going to be sitting with a loving awareness and finding a wise relationship to the measure of pleasure and the measure of suffering, to the beauty that you carry and the fears that are in your heart, to allow them actually to be met and held with respect and understanding. And then there comes a shift of identity where you're not lost in each one of those, because they all tell a story. And as you may have noticed, those stories are, if not completely untrue, they're usually rather partial, you know. And some of them don't have your best interest in mind. So to be able to step back, it doesn't mean you're not present. To actually be more present, not on automatic. This isn't self-hypnosis. This is called de-hypnosis, you know, because we're sort of hypnotized by our habits. To step back and say, oh, this is the doubting mind. This is the fearful mind. This is the tensions in the body. Let me find a relationship with these where I'm not lost in them, and let me water the seeds of presence, of calm, of steadiness, of loving kindness or compassion. Does that all make sense to you? That's really the charge, the direction, the value of what we'll do today. And we're going to start quite simply. In the first couple of sittings, primarily working with mindfulness of the breath and a kind of steadying of attention. And that's a little bit like cleaning the lens on your glasses or something so you can see more clearly. It's hard to pay attention when our awareness and our focus is scattered. So one of the first steps in the art of meditation, or even in watering seeds, you know, you got to be able to direct the water, is to steady the attention a little bit. And we use breath because it's the most universal of all practices and meditations across traditions, every tradition in Africa and, you know, in Latin America and shamanic cultures and, you know, all kinds of Eastern practices from the martial arts in Japan to, you know, the yogis in India, the breath becomes a way, and in the Jewish and Christian mystical tradition and the Sufi tradition, the breath becomes a vehicle somehow to tune ourselves to our, to bring body and mind together. And it's always with us, at least while you're in your body, anyway, and available. The spirit in beginning meditation also is one, it's not a grim duty, not one of struggle, but much more one of tending and discovery, of openness. I have this birthday card that was given to me. It's from the drugstore. It's called the Dalai Lama's Birthday Party. And it shows him opening a giant box and looking inside the ribbons on the ground and these little smiling monks around him. You don't see anything in there. And he's exclaiming, wow, nothing, just what I always wanted, you know. So this actually isn't the place to get something. This is more like the dump, really. This is the place to let go of stuff. Or in another way, it's the place to bring a kind of openness to what you discover. And that is really much, much more fruitful in learning the art of mindful presence or loving awareness with everything in your life. And also in learning the deep transformative art of compassion, to let this openness be with you. So let's begin with this, with a formal meditation. If you've been sitting for half an hour or more, just let your body stretch for a moment. See which way it wants to bend or move. Take a few deeper breaths. Mm-hmm. And then when you're stretched, let yourself sit back down in a chair. Let your feet be flat on the floor and sit upright so there's some sense of dignity. You take your seat halfway between heaven and earth in this human form. If you're on a cushion up front here, whatever posture is comfortable, you don't have to sit in some weird posture. You're weird enough as it is without adding to it from your spiritual practice, right? This is so fun for me with all these new students. I get to use all my old jokes, you know. Hey. All right, so you settle yourself on the earth here. And when you feel settled and both present, upright with some sense of dignity, but also graciousness, a kind of ease. Let your eyes close gently. And notice if there's any obvious tightness or tension in your body that you can easily release and do so. Let the eyes and the face soften and loosen the jaw. Allow the shoulders to relax and the arms and hands to rest easily. Let the belly be soft and the breath natural. And let the heart be soft as well, to receive whatever arises with a spirit of kindness, compassion. And as you sit and begin to bring a loving awareness and attention to this life, this moment now, there are these sounds of words and soft sounds around you. There's the sensations of your body ever-present. And there's, of course, a stream of thoughts and feelings, ideas, memories, plans, commentary, emotions, feeling calm or nervous or excited, or happy or sad. Let all of these things be as they are. Let them just be present. And underneath all the waves of thoughts and sounds, feelings, sensations, become aware of the wave of the breath, how the body is breathing itself in the midst of it all. And bring your attention to wherever you can sense the breath most easily. Coolness in the nostrils, swirling tingling in the back of the throat, or rise and fall of chest or belly. And if it's hard to feel the breath, take one hand and put it on your belly and feel the rise and fall in the palm of your hand. You can leave it there for the whole meditation if you like. And this is your life breath. And the first subject of the training of steadying attention. So as each breath comes in and out, or each rise and fall, let yourself feel it, sense it. If it's helpful to you, you can make a little acknowledgement, a whisper, oh, in and rising or out or falling. But mostly just sense it, beginning in the middle and the end, and then that little gap between the breaths and the next breath. And with each breath, rest your attention in it gently for 3 or 4 or 5 breaths until the attention wanders away. And then as soon as you notice, without any judgment, oh yes, here we are, come back to the next breath. And the attention will wander over and over again. And as soon as you notice, whether it's a few seconds or a few minutes later, it doesn't matter, gently return back to the breath. It's the very coming back, each time you notice and come back, that starts to establish and train a steadiness of presence that connects body and mind together. Be gentle and patient and come back again and again to this breath, this moment. this breath just now, arising, passing away. And with each breath, invite a sense of calm or ease, breathing in and breathing out. Invite the sense of calm with this breath, a sense of ease, deepening and growing breath by breath. Let the thoughts and feelings and sensations be as they are. Let them rise and fall like waves of the ocean around the breath. And feel this breath in the middle of it all, how the breath breathes itself in its own natural rhythm. Relax with this breath, ease, calm, invite the sense of presence. whatever is present, feel how the breath breathes itself in the midst of it all, this breath. You did good. So when you start to pay attention to the breath, some of you were newer, many of you have practiced for some time, there can be a mistaken sense, just out of habit, because basically we are control freaks in some fashion or other, almost all of us, that the idea is to have the right kind of breath, to calm it down, to steady it, to do something, make it longer, slower, whatever your idea is. Let it do what it wants. Your task is simply to notice this is a long breath or a short breath, a deep breath or a shallow breath. You're actually in the presence of your life breath. And what's also true is that this breath that you're breathing was breathed by her and him, you know, just a minute before, that you're actually exchanging breaths with one another and with the badger that I saw that lives on the land here, you know, and the voles and the field mice. You're exchanging breaths, and it dusted the tops of Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa as it came over the Pacific and went through the lungs of the dolphins and it came to you. It also dusted Fukushima nuclear reactor, you know. So your breath actually is this universal movement that connects you with life itself. Now, as you do it, the attention will wander all the time and you bring it back because we're trained to have a 15-second attention span. And basically the length of an advertisement is our training for attention here in this culture. So it takes a little while and you come back again and again. Without judgment, you don't have to do anything about it a minute later, 5 seconds later, 3 minutes later. You just come back gently, and the point is gently, without some idea of how much improvement you have. Florida Scott Maxwell, the novelist, writes, "No matter how old a mother is, she looks to her middle-aged children for signs of improvement," right? And we've internalized that mother and father in some way, but that's not the art or the game of meditation, which is instead an invitation to presence where you are, to live more fully present. Now, as you feel the breath, sometimes it may get tight. Try to soften with it. Sometimes it'll be tight anyway. Then just let it be tight and notice that. Sometimes it pauses, sometimes deep or shallow. It can help to pay attention to the space between breaths, because that's often when the attention drifts off. Or again, to put your hand in your belly as you are practicing. I have a friend who some years ago gave birth and did it a home birth out in the country, and her son was born with the cord wrapped and quite blue, you know, and they did a little breath into him, and then they would hold him and wait to see, was he going to start to breathe or not? And she said, that's when I really learned what it meant to pay attention to the breath, and it wasn't even my own. But there's something mysterious about being with your own life breath that connects the body and mind together. And it's a little bit like a mirror, because as you sit with it, well, Mullah Nasruddin, the Sufi holy fool, went to the bank one day and said, you know, tried to cash a check. And they said, could you please identify yourself? So he reached in his pocket and pulled out a small mirror, said, yep, that's me, all right, you know. And this is what the mindfulness of the breathing does. It actually becomes a mirror, because you're there with your breath, and then all the stuff of your life starts to show itself. But the breath helps you actually become present where you are. So a question or two or a comment, how was it? Anyone?
Hello. I just thought it was really hard.
That's excellent. What made it hard? I'm interested.
Trying to keep returning to the breath and trying to stay patient when I just wanted, I don't know. It was hard to get
when you out. Just wanted, can you finish that sentence?
Oh. To, I guess, get up and move
or run away.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is beautiful. Thank you, because what you're describing is mindfulness. You're actually starting to see. We sit down to try to quiet ourselves, and then like a flywheel, all the thoughts and all the restlessness and all those things, they're all in us. Now, if you can't stay with it, you did, which is beautiful, then it will never quiet down, because every time you get a little bit restless or something, you're going to move or go somewhere or start a new, you know, adventure or buy something or whatever, all the things. So you're actually, by sitting and feeling that, which you did, and it's not that easy, and we're going to work later on with how to really examine and be present for restlessness and sleepiness and all those energies that are coming. Right now, I'm just going to name that they're there. They're not. It's not that they're not supposed to happen. The fact that you felt it and it was so strong means that this training is actually starting to work. It's like, okay, can I sit in the middle of this and still do it? And you did. So you're actually learning that, even though it's hard. I salute you. Thank you for that. That was really great. Anybody else? Comment? Question?
Hi. Yeah, it was very hard for me as well. And I was wondering if there's ever been a time for you where you couldn't sit with it, where you yourself had to get up, or where you would even recommend to get up and move.
Yeah, there have been, like, you know, after the death of a friend that I was really close to, that was, it was just a lot of grief, and to sit with it was too hard. I got up and I walked. But for the most part, I've learned what we just talked about, how to sit in the midst of it. And sometimes there's really deep trauma that comes and it's better to go walk or do something. So I'm not saying it's always the right time to do it. But I also have a trust that you all came here wanting something, wanting to learn something. And you are not the first nudgy meditator. You're not the first to use Sanskrit. You're not the first, you know, restless meditator. You're not the first bored meditator. I mean, you know, this is par for the course. You know, you're not the first meditator to weep or to feel the kind of pain or trauma you carry. And those are actually part of the game. They're part of the, it's actually what lets you become both more compassionate, but also somehow a more courageous presence for yourself and others. So,
hi. So my question is, I can sit where it doesn't hurt, and I can sit a little straighter where it's really intense and it kind of hurts. And which one's better, and does it matter?
So you can sit where it doesn't hurt, you said? Yeah. Or you can sit really straight and it hurts? Yeah. I think sitting where you're comfortable is mostly better, but there's something deeper in your question, which somebody will say, well, why should I sit with pain at all? You know, it hurts a little. I move, then it doesn't hurt. Now it hurts there if I move, it doesn't. So there are two different tasks. One is somehow to become comfortable in your body enough so that you can do this with some ease. And therefore, you can change your posture in the middle if you need to, if it starts to hurt a lot, so that you can be present, just do it mindfully. But the other task is also not to be afraid of the range of your human experience. So sometimes, you don't have to make it stiff, but sometimes there'll be pain or hurt that just comes. And yes, you could move away by getting up and getting tea or something like that. But as that poem I read from Tamara Engel, there's also a power in learning how to sit and be present for what's joyful and what's painful. And we live in a comfort culture. It's a little cold, you turn up the heat. It's a little hot, you turn on the AC. Your car seat is heated for the cold morning, right? It massages you now, and then it asks you, what else do you want me to order your latte? But it'll be driving you shortly, you know? And so we get afraid in some way culturally of how to open to experience. So mostly sit comfortably, and don't worry. Pain will find you in its time, right? And then it's also valuable to sit with it some of the time. Don't make it your devotion. And for those who have chronic pain, you really need to find ways to move away from it because it wearies consciousness. But some of the time, if it comes, it's also important to sit with it. You don't have to make it, I promise. It'll come in its own. Okay, next.
Presence when I start to fall asleep.
Yes, you're in the presence of sleep. but just know that it's really common that you sit and you're quiet, you know, and then your body in some way also reflects what's going on. Sometimes it's like, gosh, it's so quiet, it must be bedtime, right? Because we're not used to the lack of stimulation or other things, which I'll talk about. Because it's completely natural. The main thing is just to notice their sleepiness. And then if you want, you can sit with your eyes open rather than have them closed. Or you can even stand up and meditate. It's harder to fall asleep standing up, although it's been done, right? And just learn that it's possible, you know, sometimes to, you know, bring a little more energy. But at other times, you just go through sleepiness and it's fine. Won't hurt you. Couple more quickies. Yeah, please.
Sometimes I come up with an image, like I'm on a magic carpet or I'm in a boat, mm-hmm. and it's easier for me to not get lost or distracted because I just remind myself, get back.
So there you are in your image. You're floating in your magic carpet. Where's your breath then?
Well, I'm easier to breathe because I'm on.
Because then you're aware of your breath, but there's also a sense of floating.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that. That's fine. I mean, people get very creative in meditation. Sometimes when I used to walk, when I was first learning it, I would imagine I was walking in the edge of the Grand Canyon, you know, and I didn't want to fall off or something. And it was playful, and it just kept me more present. If it helps you to stay present, it's okay. But the thing about images is they can then often drift off and, okay, now I've got a magic carpet, where should I go? You know, if it helps you actually to be more present, you can use it some. But the idea is really to feel your own breath in your body. And so if it helps a bit, that's fine. But make sure that you're actually present for your bodily experience. Enjoy it. One more, maybe.
My apologies, as I know you said you're going to talk to sleep later, but my question was actually the complete opposite, is visual imagery and tips for falling asleep at night when your mind is restless.
For falling asleep at night. Oh, yeah. Beside counting sheep, huh? Yeah, that's its own whole conversation. It's actually hard for us to wind down very often if we, you know, pay attention, because we live in such a fast pace and our screen habits interfere. I mean, so there's a lot of really good basic sleep hygiene things that you may well know. You know, dim your lights, don't go on your devices for an hour or two before. You know, have a regular time. And then when you finally do lie down and so forth, if you can't sleep, then you can meditate. And, you know, follow your breath as we do. It's boring. And the fact that it's boring actually it can lead you, okay, I don't know, the breath, I will go to sleep, right? This isn't, I might talk about it a little bit more. We're a bit of a sleep-deprived culture, of course, as people have read about. So your question points to something more important and beautiful. How do we tend our lives? Because the speed in the advertising and the, you know, the capturing of your attention is now what's out there with all the screens and all the devices and all the news and things like they want you. And they want your attention, you know. And so to meditate is actually a radical act, first for yourself, and then as you participate as a citizen in voting and as a teacher or as a member of society, business person, to step out of that unconscious grasping that capitalism in part has turned into. So it's not just your problem, but you're also experiencing something that's really culture-wide. Therefore, you don't want to blame yourself. You just say, all right, how can I manage and do this? And you become more the steward of your own life that way, which is both a big responsibility, but also it's tremendously liberating. A little bit scary, but tremendously liberating. So a story that those who've come more often will have heard from my friend Fran Peavy. She wrote, she was a great activist in her day before she died. Anyway, one day she writes, I was walking through the Stanford University campus with a friend when I saw a crowd of people with cameras and video equipment on a little hillside. They were clustered around a pair of chimpanzees, a male running loose and a female on a light chain. It turned out the male was from Marine World Africa, one of the local, you know, zoo parks. And the female was being studied for something or other at Stanford. And who I thought were the spectators were mostly scientists and some publicity people trying to get them to mate. The male was eager. You know how they can be. He grunted and grabbed the female's chain and tugged. She whimpered, backed away. He pulled again. She pulled back. This is like modern Me Too movement, right? Watching the chimps' faces, I began to feel sympathy for the female. Suddenly, the female chimp yanked her chain out of the male's grasp, and to my amazement, she walked through the crowd straight over to me and took my hand. Then she led me across the circle to the only other two women in the crowd, and we all joined hands together. She joined our hands. The four of us stood together in a circle. I remember the feeling of that rough palm against mine. The little chimp had recognized us, and reached out across all the years of evolution to form her own women's support group. there is something about, there's magnificent things about culture and about our culture, and there are also some really terrible things, the kind of unconsciousness and fears and racism and divisiveness, clinging and greed and those sort of things, so it becomes important to understand that the things that happen to us are not just personal. They are personal, but they're also conditioned in some way by the sea of culture in which we live. And therefore, to step out of culture a bit and take your seat as the Buddha that you are and say, let me see all the energies, the beautiful ones and the painful ones. Let me step back and not just be reactive, not just be caught by it, but start to be the steward of my own well-being, and therefore being able to be the steward of the well-being of others becomes, it's not just a personal act, but in some deep way it's also a political act, because it allows you to attend to the world, but from a place of consciousness and openness or freedom, that is really where the change has to come from.